woke up this morning with the sun down shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Ricardo on the board. S&P futures up 625. NASDAQ futures up 30. Is there any chance that Carl is sneaking into the city this morning because he's going to go to the big shot party at the salt shed tonight? Governor Pritzker's throwing?
Somehow I kind of doubt it. Like I'd be invited to something like that.
Well, you know, if you ponied up a little more dough and a little less criticism, you might be there.
You know, it's a fascinating little factoid that I don't know if you caught it last night, but, you know, AOC was one of the features.
Well, she's hot.
Well, some people think so. I mean, I don't know. I get it. Believe me, you can ruin your tractability, from my point of view, simply by opening your mouth sometimes.
Yes, well...
Okay, this is a little off color, but it's not terribly so, and it is true. Maybe not if you're a hooker, because I pay you and then you leave.
Well, that's what you pay a hooker for.
Well, that's right. You don't pay for that, you pay because they leave, right? That's the old saw on it anyway. But what she actually said was, now, as it turns out, as far as I can tell, the actual statement itself was a lie. But, you know, it's just politics. Everybody lies. Before I was in Congress, my family was facing foreclosure. We were all about to be thrown into the street. Then, you know, but not anymore. Oh, really? So let me see if I get this right. So you just stood up on the stage of a national political convention and basically said the answer to grift is to be a politician.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, sometimes people really do tell you who they are and really do tell you what their chosen vocation is really about. And they're dumb enough to think that it's a brag. Well, it is a brag. But they're stupid enough to think you'll buy it and think it's a good thing.
Well, I think, not defending anybody, but in her mind, she is doing what she believes is a good job, and it pays, and the family's doing better.
But how's the family get the money?
She probably gives it to them.
Oh, I see. So they provided some great value to our society, right?
Well, I don't know. I mean, there's an awful lot of people. You look at, it's a...
Well,
it's kind
okay.
of fun. It's kind of fun being in the middle on this, Carl, because, and I learn an awful lot from people on the show. But look at the Harris-Walz economic plan. Okay.
Oh my God.
Well, okay, but instead of just, all right, we don't like Harris. We think she's a dummy, but I don't know if she is or not. But her plan's got to be horrible. But it's
I'm not evaluating her. Well, apparent lack of intelligence and public intoxication. I'm evaluating what she actually said she wants to do.
Okay, well, I'm looking here at this thing. Now, everything, if you read this paragraph, and you don't have any... See, I don't have any truck with any of these people, okay? I'm just trying to look at the economics of what they're doing. I don't think either one of them is exactly the person that I would want in the Oval Office, although at least she doesn't have, you know, some long history. I was pretty relieved to see that her investments are all in, you know, passive investing stuff, and not in companies she's going to favor. You know, so some things I like about her in the sense that I'm not going to put up with a Dick Cheney or Trump doing business when he's in the Oval Office or things like that. But the rest of her, you know, I'll take and I can let it. But read this paragraph here. This is from, I'll read who the hell wrote it here. This is from Kaya Ginsky. Ginsky, is that what nationality is that? Is that Russian? Must be. What do I? Harris running mate Tim Walz made child care a focus of his economic agenda as Minnesota governor, including state tax credits and support for working families and child care industry, while Trump running mate J.D. Vance has also voiced support for an extended child tax credit. Yet, and I know you listen every day, and if you listen to our theme of the show for the last 3-4 years, we've talked from every different side of this thing, from every side of the planet, on what families are going through. And Nancy puts the people that she gives mortgages to are now up to 2.3 jobs per family. So you have a situation where, this is not sexist, used to be, not all the time, the guy was a breadwinner, lady took care of the house and the kids. And that was flipped sometime. Sometimes the lady had a better job, and it, whatever. The point was you had one person working, supporting a family. And all of a sudden it became two. Now, okay, now what's the problem with that? Well, if you have two, regardless who is which is which, not being sexist, somebody's got to take care of the kids because you're not there. So then for a long period of time we had, okay, people that were getting cash, mostly maybe, I'll use the term immigrants, maybe something. People were undocumented, not necessarily undocumented, but undocumented in the workforce. I'm sure there were citizens that were watching somebody's kids 2-3 days a week, and we're getting paid something, maybe in cash. Well, all of a sudden, that's not good enough. Which, you know, maybe it wasn't. But now all of a sudden, for how many years, Carl, did various administrations rag on people that were doing child care, were getting the short end of the stick? Okay, so now all of a sudden, they're making $20 an hour, or something, and they're getting. And boy, God help you if you have somebody. Who was the person trying to run for governor or senator or something when they? It turns out they weren't paying Social Security for their nanny. They got them thrown out of the race or some crap.
Oh, yeah, no.
Yeah. So all of a sudden now you got to do all this stuff. And now you sit there and go, wait a minute. A regular person's making $40,000 a year. How the hell do you give your child care person $40,000 a year plus Social Security? Where do the numbers go here? So what I think the basic issue I have with politicians, and you know what? You have it yourself, even though you don't realize it, is these... I use the term these idiots, and they're not idiots personally. They treat the symptoms of the problem instead of the problem that causes all these string of problems.
Right.
I mean, the simple fact is people aren't making enough dough. If they were, you wouldn't have to have child care people. You wouldn't have this. You wouldn't have... I'm not saying...
Well, the simple fact is that we've taken what was the pinnacle of America's ability to do that on a societal basis, which I think... You could argue if you look at external events that were visible to everybody, it probably was 1969 when we used slide rules to send a bunch of dudes to the moon.
Yeah, and got them back.
And got them back in one piece, okay? Now, today, we can't even manage to, we have enough waste and stupidity in the process that we can't even have Boeing put a... spacecraft up in Earth orbit and have it come back without the very real risk that everybody inside is going to be incinerated. The craziness of that, if you think about it, is how many years later, right? We see, 50 years later, we can't do it.
Well, you didn't hear the one this morning on Boeing. This is a new low. 787s have had 5 incidences of the captain's seat sliding forward when it's not supposed to, hitting the controls and putting the plane in a dive.
Well,
how can your captain's seat not be bolted down, for God's sake?
Chief, we can't make a slider for a seat latch in a car anymore. I mean, it's basically what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, that doesn't unlock when it isn't supposed to unlock, right? This is the sort of crazy thing that, we had this rush, 20 years ago. You must use low flush toilets because wasting water is a serious problem.
You gotta flush them five times. What's the difference?
Yeah, what you put in the bowl didn't go down.
Yeah.
Right? And so did you use more or less water after you flushed it four times? Well, obviously more. So what kind of stupidity was that? Now, granted, I haven't actually had to buy one in a while. So, you know, next time I do, we'll see whether or not they've actually solved this problem
They actually have, because, you know, I do some remodeling, and most of them now are, if you hit it once, it's kind of a low flush, but if you keep your finger on it, you get a lot of water.
Yeah, I'm just saying,
it's like a two-speeder.
Yeah, well, that's fine, all right? I mean, hey, listen.
It's like a one-or-two-er.
Yeah, I'm just saying, if innovation has finally caught up to the problem and solved it, that's...
But, I mean, this is not that difficult. Duh.
Well, you wouldn't think so, right? I mean, you'd think this is kind of simple. But here we are, you know, you just had the Republicans, the Oversight Committee and everything, just yesterday, comes out this report in the afternoon about all of the bribery that, you know, allegedly went through the Biden family. Right, and all of it foreign. Right, we're not talking about domestic bribery here. We're talking about foreign bribery. Not just the Burisma stuff either. A bunch of other things. Right, I mean, this has been dogging the Bidens for quite a long time. And then you have AOC get up and at the DNC and basically say, oh, by the way, the rags to riches story has become a politician, become a congressman. You know, you have Pelosi, same deal, right?
Yeah.
And this sort of situation leads to the obvious question, which is, if that's the case, why is it that you literally urinate on me and tell me it's raining?
Yep.
All right. I mean, I got into it the other day with some guy on X that's like, oh, you know, the inflation in food is, you know, it's essentially reversed and everything's fine and there's no real problem. Like, seriously, you want to run that? And then somebody came back and said, no, food's basically doubled over the last 4 years. And he, no, the statistics say, yo, bring receipts. Oh, okay, you want me to bring receipts? Well, I'll bring receipts because I run all of my grocery purchases through plastic because I want my little piddling 1% cash back. As a result, my accounting software, I mean, you know, I use Quicken like a lot of other people do, right? It captures every single transaction. I don't have to do any entry for it. It just pulls it off the data, you know, off the data stream. But by the way, here's 2020, here's 2023, both of which are full years. We have 12 months worth of data. It's more than a clean double. The number of people in my household has not changed.
It depends, no, I should say. I mean, it sort of relaxes me after I do the show before I start trading. I cook breakfast for everybody because I love to cook and it's kind of a relaxing thing. So I go to the shopping every week and I'm a pretty reasonable feel. If you're willing to just eat the sales, if it's bacon, I'll buy the bacon on sale, or bacon that week, or less sausage that week. But if you actually stick, the thing I think you have to focus on is the stuff, the simple crap. Like the fake mashed potatoes in the little aluminum foil thing, they were $1 forever, 99 cents. Now they're $1.39. I think the numbers of all that kind of stuff is about 40 to 45%.
Well,
beef is a lot. I mean, that's just my totally non-scientific read.
Well, I'll give you the scientific read on it because I know exactly where it comes from and why the disparity is there with the CPI. The CPI is a survey, so it is ticketed shelf prices. Okay. But I will tell you that from 2020 to 2023, and it's continued this year, the primary difference is that the BOGOs are gone. The coupons are gone.
Yeah.
Okay. And so now I'm paying a much higher percentage of the shelf price. So not only has the price gone up, and maybe the CPI's data on that, maybe it's accurate. Okay. But when you get rid of, but the survey cannot see the register tape. But that's what you pay, is the register tape.
Right. Oh, yeah.
All right. So when you look at it that way, it's obvious. And, yeah, I mean, there it is. And it's, and the idea that somehow this is solvable without reversing the monetary imbalances, which, by the way, is where all the government grift comes from. This is where the Pelosi's get their money from. This is where the AOC's get their money from, because they don't actually, you know, government, by its nature, does not produce things. People produce things. Government always redistributes things. Okay, well, some government is necessary. We want to have police officers. We want to have fire departments. We'd probably like to have running water and sewer systems. That's a, that's, you know, that's one of those things. And because there is a limited amount of real estate and space in order, you know, in order to put them in, you kind of sort of get forced into, in any kind of dense living situation, a monopoly kind of system, simply because there isn't enough room to have eight water companies. Okay, that's fine. I live with this. Do I, just because it ends up being the only reasonable answer to certain problems. Okay, I mean, how many air traffic control systems would you like to have? Right, I think one would be the right answer, so that they don't screw up.
Well, sure. There's these natural. That's what
they're called, natural monopolies.
But that's the whole. Yeah. That's the whole fight of what the political system is supposed to be.
Right.
Two people are supposed to be arguing, or well, two parties are supposed to be arguing on managing whatever it is, city, town, state, and I can do a better job managing than the other guy, is really what it's, but it's somehow morphed into, I'm going to take money from a whole bunch of people and give it to people that support me and shift the things that way, and hopefully I have enough people supporting me that I get in, and I throw money at my people. I mean, you look at even the last couple of weeks here in Illinois. Well, hey, just to go back real quick, just show you where this is all coming from, is when I was chairman of the marketing committee in the 90s, Carl, there was a guy who ran the marketing department, VP of marketing, and he had an assistant VP, and there were two or three ladies, and they ran a real nice ship at the CBOE. I mean, they're really good people. And both ladies had, you know, I've imagined me becoming friends with everybody, and I would get their whole story, and they would say, look, I'm going to say, you know, and they were degreed very good at what they did, so I'm going to say in the 90s, I don't know, pick a number, Carl, 65 grand they're making or something, maybe 60, 65, somewhere in there, you know, pretty highly paid ladies with a bonus probably. And one lady says, okay, it cost me X thousand for clothes, it causes me X thousand to have second car so I can get to the train station, caused me X for my train ticket because they lived in the north, which means they weren't paying parking and the other stuff, but they were getting down here in the train. And by the way, I have to pay child care of X, so my 70 grand nets out to 25, you know, or something.
Right.
And now I think the numbers have probably changed to where I never said, by the way, you're paying Social Security for the late. I mean, but now I think a lot of people are making, what's the average person, the mean person make? 40? Okay, so I'm making 40 and I'm paying out 40. Okay then, plus I need clothes and transportation.
Well, but again, this problem isn't new. A lot of people think that this is something that just showed up, you know, it's all Biden's fault, it's all Trump's fault, it's all whoever's fault. The reality is a lot more complex than that, because when we came out of the 1950s, you know, after World War II, We had a natural monopoly in manufacturing because we blew everybody else's stuff up. And, you know, that's great, but it doesn't last, right? Because Germany doesn't want to sit there and not have that. You know, they don't want to have no manufacturing base, like, forever, ever again. So they will rebuild their things. Everybody else rebuilt it. You know, they rebuilt what got destroyed. Fine. By the time we got into the, you know, the 1960s, that had happened. Okay, they've done that. And yet, we still managed to more or less, you know, keep things together. You could have a family, raise a family, one person going off to work, the other person staying home raising the kids. So all these externalities that we have loaded onto people, those didn't have to be there. Now they do. And when we went through the period of the 1970s, what was the answer? The answer was, second person goes off and gets a job in order to absorb the grift that had been shoved into people. We're out of those shock absorbers. They're gone. We used them. You can't use them twice.
Well, you're up to, as Nancy says, you're up to 2.3 jobs per family.
Well, guess what? You're at the point, yeah, and if you lose one of them, what happens? You end up in the street.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? So the thing is, those extra cushions, if you will, they've been consumed. They're gone. My dad and I used to get into this all the time because he was like, well, you know, this isn't so bad, and it isn't so bad. I said, the reality is that, yes, it is bad because you've done this. And then people are like, well, you know, what are you going to do about it? Well, I'll tell you what young people are doing about it. They're not making any children.
Well, that's right. But, you know, you mentioned the Germany situation. Yeah, but they compete. I mean, their society is a little different than ours, but not that much. Yeah. They competed sort of the same way. I mean, they brought cars over here. The cars weren't cheaper. They were more expensive. The point is they were the hoi polloi people. I mean, to drive
them. Well, not necessarily, Chief. There's a VW Jetta sitting in my driveway that my daughter owns.
But
now.
I'm saying it wasn't. Their people got paid nothing, and they polluted the hell out of their place, like China's willing to do.
Oh, no. And the thing is, that car's got 300,000 miles on it, and it still runs perfectly fine. By the way, there's not been a single major component in the driveline that's been replaced on it.
Well, that's the thing. Our cars were, you know,
they're falling apart.
Well, it's... When how can I say this economically? When cars lasted, when you bought a car and your payment plan was 3 years, the car was pretty much rusted after 3 years, especially in Chicago. But now you're giving people a loan for 10 years, the car better last 10 years, or you got a big problem.
You know, we've taken all this stuff out, okay? And then you look at what's happened in the medical field, and this, you know, I mean, you know, I hammer on this all the time. You have a business model that has nothing to do with human health and has everything to do with getting as many people as possible on subscription systems, which has happened everywhere else in our society as well. All right, I mean, I fired Adobe. Infamously, not all that long ago, even though I'd been a long-term customer of theirs, because they literally screwed me out of something that I had bought. In that I had a hardware failure.
If you fire Adobe, where do you go? Aren't they everywhere?
Well, they're not. They're not the only option. Affinity Software has a Photoshop-like package that actually I'd argue has some things that Photoshop doesn't do. There's a little bit of relearning to do, but it's every bit as powerful, and it's reasonable, and it's a one-time fee, and that you don't be connected to the internet for monitoring, so there's no task running around your computer all the time. It's, you know, watching everything. There's none of that nonsense. They're not the only option. There's actually a free one called GIMP, which I've played with over the years for a long time. It's been around forever, and it's actively maintained. It's open source. I don't particularly care for it. I just think it's kind of clunky figuring out how to... I mean, it can do all the things you want to do. It's just kind of clunky. But Adobe literally screwed me. I had a failure, and they have shut down their servers that validate your licenses. So if that happens to you, the $1,000 you paid for the package some number of years ago literally is a pumpkin.
Well, we got a dash. Hey, I think Kenny's calling him, but if not, be nice to hang around. Hopefully he's feeling well enough to call in. SP Futures up 3, NASDAQ Futures up 12. We've got just keep dribbling higher here. It's gonna be like 8 days in a row on the NASDAQ, and big run on the gold the last couple of weeks, so a lot of stuff going on. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jocks. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there.
Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains. Think about some rebalancing, address some growing concentration issues, maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you will find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at time@ptisecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ricardo on the board. SP Futures up 350. NASDAQ Futures up 14. We had a couple earnings last night. Lowe's said the business is slowing down a little bit. They're only down a little bit. Dow Futures are down 14. I don't really see anything moving much in the Dow. I got Boeing down 214. They seem to have an issue with the captain's seats in the 787s. I don't know where that came from, but that's just, well, your captain's sliding around up there. You can't even imagine this stuff, but anyway, hopefully get that fixed. We're in Europe. We've got the DAX down 11. Call that flat. FTSE down 61.7%. CAC round up 3. Call that flat. So other than the FTSE, everybody else is kind of flat. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 684. That's another 1.8% over 38,000. 38,062. Hang Seng down 58.3%. 17,511. Still hanging over 17.5. Shanghai giving up yesterday's gains. Down 27, but 0.9%, 28.66. They've been mired in this high 2800s here for a while, mid to high. Yesterday, Dow was up 236, S&P up 54, NASDAQ up 245. Big move in the afternoon. We seem to have a lot of mutual fund buying every day in the close. Everybody just buys into the close, and you run up on the close. I think it's mutual fund buying. It's the oldest trick in the book is to buy in front of mutual fund buyers and sell it to the mutual fund guys. Been going on since God knows how long, 60, 70 years. 10 years, 3.87 unchanged. The Bund down 1 basis point, 2.23. Japan unchanged at 0.89. We've got oil up 5 cents, 74.42. Again, kind of the lower end of the range. The range, I think, being like 73 to 83. Brent down 15 cents, 77.80. Natural gas up a penny, 2.25. RBOB unchanged, 2.26. Gold, which has been creeping, a little bit more than creeping today, up $22, $25.63. Silver up 55 cents, $29.85. And we're long both of these, so we've had a really good couple of weeks for a lot of people. A lot of my clients like they have been in the gold and silver for a while, and all of a sudden now we're making money every day. We didn't for a while. We were a little early probably, but now we're coming. It's coming home a little bit. Copper up 2 cents, $4.20. Not everybody. I got a few guys that like that, a few guys that don't. A lot of people are just in the regular markets. Foreign exchange. The euro 110.8, so that's as high as we've seen that in a while. British pound almost at 130, 129.97. So the dollar is a little bit weaker again today. The yen, however, is not much, 146.47, not much movement there. We have Bitcoin bounce back. It was down, now it's up 1700 points, 60,697. So almost back to 61,000. Trade under 50 2 weeks ago Monday. Now it's back where it was. So there's the U-turn. Ricardo, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 6:35 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. We're looking at 68 degrees right now with a high of 70 degrees. Mostly sunny. A very nice day for outdoor activities. Tonight will be mainly clear with a low of 60 degrees. Over to Phoenix, Arizona. 90 degrees right now with a high of 112. Mostly sunny with a temperature near the record of 113. Beware of dehydration and heat stroke. Tonight will be windy and partly cloudy and very warm. with a low 88 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe, 16 minutes. We're looking at 32 minutes inbound Edens from Lane Cook, inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 20 minutes, inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 18 minutes, and Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 19 minutes. Lastly, sports in the MLB. Yesterday, the Diamondbacks beat the Marlins 9-6, and the White Sox sadly lose to the Giants 5-3. Today, we got a couple other games. Diamondbacks against the Marlins again at 5:40 p.m. White Sox play the Giants again at 8:45 p.m., and the Cubs play the Tigers at 7:05 p.m. Lastly, the NFL preseason games are in session. Thursday, August 22nd, the Bears play the Chiefs at 7:20 p.m. That's all I got for you, Chief.
Did you get your Super Bowl tickets?
No, I did not.
What the hell? Do we have Joel?
Good morning, Chief.
What's up, man? How are you?
Good, good. So when's silver going to catch up to gold?
I don't know. When are the gold miners going to catch up to gold?
Yeah, I mean, that laggard trade, I mean, how come when laggard trade, you just keep saying laggard trade? It never, you know, like the IWM or... Actually, the GDX is a little bit closer to its all-time high than silver. I mean, where are the Hunt brothers when you need them?
Well, yeah, when gold, I mean, because it's been lagging, I mean, a lot of my clients I have in the GDX, like I said, we've had really good last month or so. As in, like, really, really good, because we actually were a little longer than just being long and stuff. But I'm going to say, when gold got to 2,200 last time, the GDX was like 48, and now gold's almost 2,600, and it's not even 40 yet. So I mean, I would have guessed it would be like 50 here, but there must be. It's hard for me, Joel. It's hard to find out what the story is in the gold mining industry in like African places. I mean, are the expenses going up that much to where they should be making a fortune here? And I don't. They're going up. I mean, the companies, Barrick Gold, are going up, and KGC, they're going up steady, but I don't know. Maybe people don't think it's going to last or something. I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, you know, they talk about the industrial uses, you know, for silver versus gold. No, I mean, it's just the stock is a stock is a stock. And I guess when it comes to, you know, to the markets, just, you know, being in something like, you know, some of these miners, it just, you know, it's not sexy. It doesn't have AI. And, just doesn't it, you know, regardless of what the bullion's doing, you know, there's other places to put the money in the market. Whereas if you want old gold, you know, in physical gold, well, there's ways to buy coins and stuff. So that's really the only way I look at it, Chief.
Well, a lot of people, younger people, I think Bitcoin is their gold.
Yep, that's true. That's a good point.
You know, hope for them, they're right about that. I don't know why I don't trust that. I don't believe anything about Bitcoin. The idea that it's straight, there's nobody behind it, that nobody can steal from inside. And I wonder how long, again, this is not an assault on Bitcoin, I just wonder how long, when I see the rules that we have to play by, when I say we at PTI, I mean, if you had an account here, which, you know, maybe one day you will, and all of a sudden we send stuff home to you, and it gets returned like three times, if we don't track you down, after it's like 3 or 6 months, we kick that money to the Michigan Treasury. I mean, this idea in Bitcoin that they don't have to, any of these rules don't apply to them. You know, if all of a sudden, you know, they don't know who the hell you are, and if you lose your identity, that somehow 100 years from now there's going to be the Joel wallet there with 50 grand in it, and nobody else can touch ever, and it never gets back to you, and it never reverts back to the state. That's a whole different world. I don't know, this whole idea that people think they can stay outside the rest of the world for a while, for forever. I don't see it happening. I mean, somebody's gonna say, "Hey, where the hell is the dough?"
Yeah, I mean, it's there until it's not there, right?
Yeah. How would anybody know if somebody's stealing it?
You know, there's the other thing too. I was talking to a younger relative of mine about, you know, Bitcoin. And it's not talked about much, but it's just the amount of energy consumption that it takes to run it. You know, I mean, call me an environmentalist over here or whatever, but, you know, it's comparable to that of many small countries. And, you know, so that, you know, the carbon footprint on that can't be good. But you know what? It's a story. It's been a story for a while. Yep. Its futures are traded on it. There's ETFs, so you can talk about it as much as you want until there's like that major hack and, you know, people get wiped out, and it's continuing to be an investment vehicle.
Well, the issue with stuff like that, and I went back and researched the tulips. And everybody bought tulips, and it was a craze, and it didn't really harm any. Well, it could harm somebody if you bought them and they went down, but all of a sudden they became exchange traded, and all of a sudden you could borrow to buy them. Sound familiar? And as soon as you now all of a sudden you can borrow to buy the Bitcoin. Somebody will lend you dough, and oh, by the way, they're exchange traded.
You got it.
Yeah,
you got it. General market thoughts here before I go. I mean. What an amazing rally here. A little over 2 weeks ago, the Japanese crisis. I do notice this one is a little bit more broad-based. I was looking at the big components in the S&Ps. Microsoft still quite a bit off its all-time high. NVIDIA creeping up there. Google and Amazon. So it's a little bit more of a broad-based rally. I think the thing that investors should pay attention to, and the whole world, it's a foregone conclusion that the Fed's going to go a quarter point. Boy, oh boy, if Powell was ever in a position to not do that, I think it would be now. I mean, we've been all over the map. I guess we'll have to see with the next unemployment data. There's been a lot of criticism that they moved too slow to fight inflation, and now they're moving too slow to lower rates. So I think that's something that, it's Jackson Hole's on Friday. It's the big ballyhoo. We do have some significant earnings this week. But I think right now, the risk to the market is, what comes out of Powell's mouth on Friday at Jackson Hole. And, hawkish, dovish, whatever, if he comes off a little bit hawkish, we could get back a lot of those gains, and still keeping an eye on the yen. That certainly hasn't, that hasn't really started to retreat yet. So I think there's still little concerns over the yen carry trade.
I have to ask this question every year. Are you going?
Am I going
to Jackson
Hole? No.
Why can't we have anybody from the show go to Jackson Hole? We got all these good guys.
Do I want to go to Jackson Hole?
Sure you go. Sure you go.
No, man. Summers, Michigan, couple months left. Nah, man.
If you and I were there, we'd plant our behinds at the bar and just watch all these high-end people flow over us and talk to all of them and find out what's going on. I bet we'd come back with 100 shows.
Okay, quick question for you. Are you still broadcasting from the office that I was at several years ago? How's downtown? How's things?
Our watering hole last night closed at 5 o'clock because they thought demonstrators were coming by, so we couldn't go over there. Some people have boarded up. It's a goat bleep. Every policeman that you think should be around protecting somebody else is all about this convention. I mean, the cost to other people is dramatic, but so far it hasn't been a big problem. But I mean, you want to be in the fence business. The massive amount of fence is. The three big shots are all staying at three different hotels. So all three hotels have two layers of 10-foot fences in front of them.
All right, log fences.
You got long fences.
Chicago.
It's unbelievable. they had the NASCAR race here.
Yep.
Inconvenience to piss out everybody for probably 4 weeks, easy, maybe five. And then they get a bill from the parking meter people that they covered up enough for parking meters. So according to the contract, the city's got to write them a check for $600,000. What do you think the parking meter bill is going to be for this thing when they close off like 8 streets?
Oh boy!
We have to send them a check for like $2 million or something. It's nuts! It's nuts.
All right, Blue, bud. Talk to you next week.
All right, Ricardo, do we have Kenny?
Yes, we do.
We do.
Hey, how are you, buddy?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good. Hey, you sound great.
Well, thank you. I feel much better. Thank you.
Well, good.
What a hit of time.
Well, it's one of the famous lines from Vin Scully when Don Drysdale was still alive, and they were talking about some guy on the injured list, and he goes, "Dan, he is like the rest of us, day to day."
Yeah, exactly, day to day.
I didn't get a chance to finish this up with Joel, but obviously, by the way, are you going to Jackson Hole? You're probably our biggest candidate. You know these guys better than anybody.
No, I decided not to go this year.
Well, you know, they're not going to invite Carl. They're not going to invite me. They're no. sure as hell not going to invite Hal with his libertarian economic policy. So you're the only one that could actually fit in, probably.
Yeah, but I think my invitation got lost in the mail. I didn't get one.
Oh, God. It's over. I'd assault that mailman if I were you. He's probably got it.
It's amazing, isn't it? Because Jackson Hole is typically not really a market-moving event, but they're putting so much emphasis on it this year because they're so panicked. You know, the hedge fund guys and the momentum guys, they all want, you know, multiple rate cuts. They wanted it to happen in July. Now they want to make sure it's going to happen in September. They want to make sure that JJ is going to say exactly what they want him to say. You know, the fear always is he'll say something. They'll hear what they want to hear. Either it's going to be exactly what they want or it isn't. And if it isn't going to be exactly what they want to hear, then, you know, watch as they hit the sell button again, you know, trying to lock in the profits that they've created over the last week and a half. I mean, look at this. Remember the morning after the weekend when Warren Buffett announced that he sold half his Apple stock and everyone panicked going, oh, my God, what does he know? I got to sell my Apple. Guess what? Apple's up 30%. Since that announcement. It's up 30% since that announcement. NVIDIA, you know, they all started talking about the AI story was, you know, was over and, oh, my God, it was too stretched. NVIDIA's back up 40% since Monday, August 5th. So, you know, it's just nuts to me. But they're putting all this emphasis on Jay Powell and rates. And if they don't hear exactly that rates are going to get cut in September, then again in November, then again in December by at least 25 basis points, then they're gonna have a nervous breakdown again. And they're going to start hitting the sell button.
Well, why instead of, you know, jumping up and down and, you know, and grabbing your underwear about these rate cuts, I mean, from last October till now, the money supply has gone up damn near every single month.
Yeah.
So the idea that these guys are fighting inflation is an absolute pipe dream.
Correct. And they're not fighting inflation.
They're maintaining and increasing the wealth bubble. I mean, and you and I can, I mean, you came out and, as usual, said exactly right about the last 2 weeks. What do you suppose if we were privy, which we're not anymore because we're just regular citizens, if we were privy to the weekly money supply numbers, how much money do you think they poured in that Monday and Tuesday for the market to be up 8 straight days after that?
Yeah, I know. I don't know. You would probably know the answer to that question because you follow it much closer.
But they stopped giving you the weeklies like 3 years ago.
They stopped giving you the weeklies.
I'm thinking this is not all that, you know, revolutionary. I think the people who make the weeklies still do. Somebody's getting them, just not us. I don't think they fired all those people and said there will be no weeklies and we won't even add them up ourselves till the end of the month. I doubt if that's happening.
Well, I doubt that's happening. That's because they're giving themselves that information, not anybody else. So I guess you could say that's almost inside information, right? Because
I think
they've
the
got
Fed,
information that we don't have.
I think the Fed is ripe with inside information. And they think the member banks deserve it. They think other people deserve it.
Listen, it's everybody. It's the Fed that's ripe. It's Congress that's ripe with inside information. Come on. Who's kidding who? These people get paid $170,000 a year, yet they've got $25 million bank accounts. Really? Really? Come on.
Well, I actually, no, this is a while ago, Kenny. Maybe when you and I just first started doing the show together, didn't some gnome, it was in a song once, remember, some gnome from, was he Hong Kong or someplace, wrote some big paper on how the Fed is front-run constantly. And they did the same thing with the labor numbers and said you can't find any pattern whatsoever that people can front-run those numbers.
No,
I think the Fed is singularly guilty of this.
Yeah, but wasn't that in this latest hostage swap that happened, right, where we got the Wall Street Journal reported back, but we gave back a couple of Russian cybersecurity people. Wasn't that one guy that got caught that actually was returned? Wasn't he the guy that broke into the Fed and nobody knew it? And this guy had all this information about what was happening, what filings were happening, what the news was before anyone else did, sent all that information back to Russia. and really manipulated the market. We held him in prison for, you know, a number of years, but now he was let go in that hostage swap that happened, you know, 2 weeks ago. It's a very interesting story about that guy and how he was nailed here in the United States, but then how we gave him back to what he was doing and how he actually, broke into the Fed and had all this inside information well before anyone else had it.
Kenny, you being a New York dude for a long time, even though you're originally from Boston, I'm going to say you know the outrage when the wrong people get the right information.
Yeah.
It's got to be the right people.
The right people have to get the information. Right.
If you and I got it, that's a problem, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. But if Vladimir Putin gets it, that's all good.
We had a dude in here that was, he's still a friend. And matter of fact, he brought us corn last week because he and his buddies go out and pick sweet corn and bring it to the food depository.
Yeah.
Which is, they pick thousands of ears of corn. Food depository feeds, everybody, not everybody, but a lot of people here in Chicago. Anyway, so he's our commodity guy. And he was in, he brought a dude in from the commodity side. The guy who put out the commodity reports, the Department of Agriculture or whatever.
Yeah.
And he said the things they go through, they had some guy, he came in, he was putting soda in the pop machines. And they said, you can't leave till the numbers go out. They made the guy sit there for 4 hours. I mean, they're serious when they put out these reports.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there are people in government that actually give a crap about keeping things secret. I don't think the Fed's one of them. They think the right people deserve to get it.
Agreed. And I think there are people that want to play by the rules, but I think there's a lot more people that like it, when they don't play by the rules. But it's okay for them because, they're not doing anything wrong.
Well, If you and I were running the Fed, okay, and we were going to make a major policy change, and we sit there and go, oh, geez, Kenny, how much do you think we have to add to the system or take out of the system to make this policy change? I think both of us would come to the realization, and I would hope that we would never go for this temptation, if we let it be front-run a little bit, we don't have to do as much. We don't have to put in as much or take out as much, because the other scumbags that we give it to, they're going to trade ahead of us, have already done our work for us.
Yeah, right. They have.
Yeah.
They already have.
So in their mind, it's almost probably justified. But yeah. It's always the same people.
That's right. They'll always figure out a way to justify it, right?
Yeah.
You need to figure out a way to justify it.
Without a doubt. So how many more days can we go here? Are they going to continue to reinflate for another, 10 months where all of a sudden, the market's going to be up another 25% and the rest of the people are left holding the bag?
I think they very well could. Look, tomorrow, when's it coming? Tomorrow or today, that BLS, that new BLS number? Is it today at 10 o'clock? That revision to the jobs numbers over the past year? I think it's today. It might be tomorrow at 10 o'clock, but I think it might be today. But it's going to be interesting to see what that report says, because that's going to be revised downward. And so it's not going to suggest the big rosy picture that the current administration has been playing. But to your point, I think, look, we're in the last 2 weeks of August, and I've been saying this for a while, it's always an exaggerated time, because there's lots of people both in Europe as well as in the U.S. that are taking advantage of the waning days of summer. They're away from their desks, they're traveling, whatever, and so volumes are lower, trading volumes are lower, and moves tend to be exaggerated. And that's exactly what I've been saying all along. It's exactly kind of what's happening. And then we got this big Jackson Hole thing. So I think they're rallying it into Jackson Hole. So here's my question, and I said it this morning. So we have this buy the rumor, sell the news type of event. Because if Jay Powell comes out and says, yes, we're ready, yes, rates are going to start to move down at the next meeting, that's going to be exactly what they've been pricing in. So now what's the upside? Where do we go from here? If they're going to cut 325 basis point cuts in September, November, and December, okay, then where do we go? We've already priced that in, right? Are they going to start talking about cutting another 50 basis points in January, February, March? Is that where it's going to go, and that's going to keep it going? Or is the market finally going to, pull back, probably, hopefully, retest the lows that we saw just 2 weeks ago and churn a little bit to build more of a base, and then start to move higher again? I think that has to happen. But I'm not sure they're going to let it happen.
I don't think they're going to let it happen. And I think because of because of the wealth, well, I don't know if it's going to be a bubble, it could be permanent, the wealth bubble and the amount of money that's in the stock market, they actually have massive increases in the money supply. They can actually cut the interest rates and still increase the money supply, which is pretty darn sneaky because one is not the same as the other.
No, correct.
But right. How many people know that, Kenny? 10 that are on the show?
Yeah, there's probably not a lot of people. But look, here's the other question that we keep asking ourselves. Okay, great. They're going to cut rates 25 basis points in September and 25 again in November and 25 again in December. Is that really going to bring down the price of steak and chicken and insurance and housing costs and all the other stuff? It's not. It's not going to affect the price that you and I pay when we go to the grocery store. It isn't. The Fed's going to cut rates 25 basis points. Great. Is milk coming down a buck? No.
They're going to lie to you.
Right. I understand they're going to lie. But here's the point. Once these prices are up, they're here. Now they're here to stay. Now everyone just has to get used to these prices. This is where they are. Unless we have a real, real deep recession like we had in the early 80s, I don't think prices are coming down at all. This is just going to be, this is going to become the norm. And this is what it's going to be.
Well, the prices probably won't come down, but you're going to see a lot of places go out of business.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. You're going to see more and more. We see more and more places. I mean, Audrey and I go out pretty much every Saturday, and we make the rounds. You know, we don't go to high-end joints or anything, but every one of them now is putting up chairs at 8:30 on a Saturday night.
Yeah.
I mean, I just wonder why they must know that this wealth bubble is hurting. And then you have articles like the one last week where the lady said that 59% of people are so wrong when they say they're in a recession. Don't they realize how good we're all getting it? Who's we? You got a mouse in your pocket? They used to say on the trading. I don't know how, if you and I got the job, Kenny, how we would, this wealth thing is huge. And I don't know how you can get where you and I might want to go without dissipating some of that. I wouldn't want to see the market go down 50%, but I don't see how you avoid if you stop pouring money in. That I don't see how you avoid that.
Well, and that's exactly the point. That now they're stuck, right? Their back is against the wall. If they start to not pour money in or pull the money back, then you're going to see the market pull back and pull back fairly significantly and probably fairly quickly. I think it would happen fairly quickly because the technology today would allow it to happen that fast, right? It wouldn't be pretty by any stretch, and they know that. So I think it's going to be very difficult for them to stop this game that they're playing. I really do.
Well, here's we got just a minute or two here, Kenny, but I think there's two things here that I see are coming a little bit unglued. Yep. One is the international coordination. I think we're pushing money into the system, and I don't think we care about inflation. I think that the European, the Brits and the European people are starting to, that's why you're seeing the dollar starting to drop. So the coordination doesn't seem the same it was during COVID, where we did the exact same thing. That's an issue. And I honestly think, and again, I don't have any positions that are, some of my people probably do. I think this Bitcoin's an issue. There's too much money in a spot that's, all of a sudden, one day, we could find out maybe around for the next 500 years, but I think if there's an issue there, there's a problem. And you never really know where these things are going to come from, but if these guys, I got them up 2% in the money supply in the last year, and by the way, going very much increasing the last few months. So if they pop out another 4% in the next 6 months to keep the wealth bubble where it is, and the Swiss and the Euros and the Brits don't do that, and the dollar starts dropping, I think that's a problem. And you can't just do this on your own. And I think the coordination is starting to fail.
Well, I guess we're going to see. Sweden just made the note today, right? They cut their rates by 25 basis points this morning, but they're very curious to see what the Fed does because right now there's a 2 percentage point spread between where we are and where they are. And they don't want it to get much bigger. So now they're, even though they want to continue to cut rates, they're not going to do it until they know what the Fed's going to do, right? So they want to try to keep it tight. So they're all trying to coordinate it around what the Fed's next move is going to be and when is it going to be and how big is it going to be. I think that's going to be very interesting. That's going to be a very interesting global story to see how other nations react to whether the Fed moves or not move and how much they move by.
Well, did you see one of the four people running for office that will say absolutely anything just to get a vote? The Republican VP guy said that we need to go back to Donald Trump when he left office. Inflation was 1.4%. God's sake, right. The guy just put 40% money supply into the system. Talk about getting out while the getting was good. I mean, does anybody really think that this inflation isn't a two presidential phenomenon? I mean, really?
Well, do you think? Listen, I'm afraid because I think if the Democrats win again, then inflation is going to rear its ugly head all over again.
I don't think it's ever stopped.
So fearful of that.
Well, I mean, it's one of my friends, and she's getting so right wing, it's crazy. She says that I bump into her in the grocery store, and she goes, "I'm so tired of paying Biden inflation prices." And I go, "Gee, didn't Trump?" And she said, "It's just like Jimmy Carter." And I won't say the lady's name; it's not Audrey. And I go, "By the way, you know, I don't want to say something, but you're old enough to remember Nixon's wage and price controls, Jerry Ford's whip inflation. Now, that was long before Carter." "Yeah, but everybody knows it was Carter." "No, it wasn't Carter. What are you, out of your mind? I mean, are we going to blame this on this guy when Trump was the guy with COVID and the other stuff? I'm not saying other people wouldn't have done somewhat the same. But does anybody think this is not a Trump phenomenon? I mean, his time in office phenomenon, not that anybody, not if there were a Democrat in there, he probably would have done the same thing. But I mean, at least let's try and match some of the stuff up. I mean, last week I went, and Kenny, you should never do this, I went back and looked at the percentage of hospitalization. Right now we've got the CPI saying medical care is, 6.8% of the basket, right? And we all know that it's higher than that. It's more like 21%. So I actually went back and I found a site that gave a percentage of the GDP that was medical care going all the way back to like 1960 or something, when it was like 5%. So the biggest jumps came virtually every in the 70s. It was there was the Democrats and it went up hugely under Reagan. It went up massively under Bush 1 when he ignored it. It went up a little bit under Clinton. Went up a lot when Johnson and those guys were. I mean, it doesn't matter who's in there. It just keeps going up. So to say, "Oh, Trump's going to do this or she's going to do this," the fact is, neither party's done anything for like 50 years. I mean, the more long-term you look, the more you realize these elections almost don't mean anything. They're not even running the place. Clearly, the hospitals and insurance companies are running the place.
Right. Wait, tell me something. What's it like in Chicago right now? Lots of stores are boarded up. Is that right?
You want to be in the fence business. So the hotels where these guys are staying, there's two 10-foot fences, you know, with a barrier between them. It's like four people breached the outer fence at the United Center last night, and they got arrested. Some people that got messed up, not necessarily the big places, like small people that got, like, the camera companies and stuff that got looted, some of those guys have decided to do board-ups. You'll see the board-up trucks all over downtown, but I haven't got out and walked around. I know the bar we went, Ceres, we closed last night at 5 because they, you know, that area through there where the Board of Trade, where they took the street, that's all boarded up because they don't want people gathering there.
Yeah.
So any place they think people might hang has been boarded up.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. All right, well, listen, I'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, take care of yourself. SP Futures up 3, NASDAQ Futures up 10. Real quick break, back Professor Helsner.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now. Right here, right now.
Hear ye, hear ye. The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. Ricardo on the board. SP Futures up 3. NASDAQ Futures up 11. We're slightly the upside here this morning. Pretty good rally in gold, up $22. Do we have the professor?
Morning, Tom.
How are you? Yet another contributor to Stocks and Jocks without an invitation to Jackson Hole with somebody they could bring with, meaning me.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing about Jackson Hole is all those billionaires kicked the poor millionaires out, and now the poor millionaires live over on the other side of the Tetons in places like Driggs, Idaho. But hey, Driggs has got a really cool Lynx golf course if you like losing balls in the eastern Idaho winds.
I remember Driggs, Idaho. I've been to, what's the name of the ski resort there? Grand Targhee.
Yeah, Grand Targhee.
At least twice. And in my old Jeep, I had a 73 Jeep Wagoneer. And for those, if you ever...
Nice.
If you ever watched the movie, Hot Dog the Movie, which, you know...
Yeah.
the first scene in the movie, they get this girl being tossed out of this guy's car. Get out of here. And the guy had just done this amazing ski run. And right away when he's doing a ski run, I knew where he was, because Grand Targhee is so cold up there that whenever you see a powder picture where guys are going down with the powders like dust behind them, and it's up in the air, and everybody's got the beards with the... It's probably done at Targhee, because the powder stays, it never gets warm. Anyway, so they dump this girl out at the gas station. I go, wait a minute, I know that gas station. I've got gas there. Well, the drive up to the ski resort from Driggs is like a big, long, two-lane driveway. It's got to be, what, like 3-4 miles, like straight up. And in the old Jeep, I'm like, we were going up, and we made it. And the guys are coming down so fast, but the snow at the side of the road is so soft that if they ran into the snow, they just got out, pushed it out, and went on again. Just kept going at just the same speed. They didn't care if they banged the wall a couple times. It was a different time, you know,
Well, you know, my cousins, I took my cousins up there skiing. This is when they were little guys, when I was in the Navy. And I wasn't a very good skier. And I was snow plowing down this. They talked me into going down the big run, the dangerous run.
Oh, God.
And I was snow plowing down that thing just to get down it. And they must have passed me like, I don't know, 3 times.
God.
They're all like.
You can't.
They were like teenagers, and I was in my 20s. I was in the Navy. And I took them up there, and those guys passed me 3 or 4 times, and they were wearing shorts.
Yeah, you can't be doing snow plowing. It's that. Plus, I don't think it ever worked.
No, it doesn't work very well at all.
No. Anyway,
I just never was very good at skiing. I tried it. I thought I'd like it. I just was never very good at it. And I know when I'm not very good at something.
I got to where I was good enough to really like the fairly steep groomed runs. I could never turn quick enough to be a bump guy.
I mean, I don't even know what that means, bump guy.
It means you go down hills where they don't groom them. They got these huge bumps, and you bounce between them like a mogul.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
I could never do that. Plus,
I had some tenants that were snowboarders, and they loved Utah snow because it was really powdery, just incredible powder. And they would do all those tricks and stuff.
I was on that. But
yeah, they're like those skateboarders that on snow, right?
The knuckle draggers, yeah.
And they'd go. One told me that he only went 80 times that winter when he rented that apartment for me, our downtown condo. Yeah, he went 80 times, and he said that was a slow year. Man.
Well, we went with Dr. J and his one of his buddies that he went to college with. Ended up being one of these ski dudes. And when you're up at Snowmass, or what's the other one next to it, the oldest one up there? Snowbird, and what's the other one? Alta. Alta's like the oldest one.
Yeah.
Well, it's so steep that they have avalanche problems all the time. So they've got buried explosives, and guys actually take shots with these high-powered rifles if they think there's a problem and try and bring the snow down. And they have big holes where they check on the snowpack and where there's ice. And the last thing you want is to have a big snowstorm, a little bit of warm weather to where the top like will melt a little bit, and then you get snow on top of that. That's super dangerous.
Yeah.
Because it's snow on top of the ice, and it's liable to go at any time. Well, this guy, he's doing this in the morning, and you hear all the shots going off and the explosions. I'm going, what the hell's that? So the guy meets us at noon. It was my brother and I and Jan. Well, Jan's a real good skier, and you know, I was okay, but nothing like, you know, he's way better than me. So after 2 runs with these two guys, I go, you know what? I'll meet you guys at the bar. Go knock yourself out.
Well, that's where I usually ended up at. I was, I would end up there. I think that was more fun.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was always a star at the après-ski activity. You know, nobody cares about this, but I always had to quit my skiing, go back to the place. It was always like a big workout for me. Shower up, put other duds on, put your jeans on, and go to the bar. The guys would just walk straight in, like, wearing their sweaters and their parkas and stuff, standing there in his hot bar drinking beer. I mean, God, you guys must smell like a goat or something. How do you stand there in your ski sweater and your ski outfit in a bar? But people do that all the time.
Well, you know, I think it's probably the only place where smelling bad is sexy.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Well, then there's the old adage, if everybody smells, does anybody smell? Anyway, hey, what's going on with the market? Market's going up 8 days in a row. We got gold rallying. It seems like, I mean, I was just talking to Kenny, that some of this communication with the Dow are now slipping here almost every day, a little bit every day. With the communication with the other, our guys are a little more concerned about maintaining asset prices than maybe the people in Europe are, it seems at this point. There's a little bit of a disconnect. And also, I want you to comment on the idea that we're actually going to have rate cuts with the money supply going up, which is not very intuitive to monetary people like you and me.
Yeah. Well, if you look at M2, which I've been tweeting about today, if you were to extend the pre-pandemic trend line to today, M2 is 15% higher than it would have been had we stayed on that trend. So, to me, that says the Fed has never really stopped.
They did, like, from the early 23 down to October 23, and they started right back up again.
Well, what I'm saying is the pre-pandemic trend. If you extend that pre-pandemic trend line from before the trend, where it was going before the trend, to today, if we had never done the COVID thing and we were on that, you know, we continued on that same path, we're 15% higher than we would have been. As of today, we're 15% higher. So that tells me the Fed, you know, it was really inflationary during the pandemic. And then it didn't like reverse that and go restrictive. It just was less inflationary. All it did is made credit more expensive. Housing lending is still climbing. And I mean, you look at the bubble, the lending bubble of COVID. You know, COVID monetary policy and fiscal policy, there's this massive COVID bubble that looks like a rim rock in southern Idaho. Seriously, it's just this massive parallel shift upward in total lending through the pandemic. And if you look at it before and after the pandemic, if you look at that pre-pandemic trend, all lending in the United States is much higher than it was, than it would have been had, you know, stayed on that pre-pandemic trend. And then you look at crude oil production. You were talking to Kenny about who's running the show here. Honestly, I don't think Obama, Trump, Biden, I don't think there's really a difference. Because if you look at oil production, you have this oil production trend with Obama, Trump, that's pretty steep. And then you have this Trump, Biden trend that's pretty steep, but not as steep. I don't see a real difference in who's running the White House.
If you look,
I think what that tells us is that pharma and maybe big oil are really, and banks are really running the U.S.
I think the oil, the market's running that. The oil market is bigger than the president.
Yeah, but you know, Biden comes in and says he's going to be, you know, the greenest president of all time, and his trend line, if you look at his trend line of oil production, it just continues what Trump did post pandemic. And then you look at Obama was going to be the great savior of green technologies and transform us into a green economy. But you look at his last couple years, they're on the same trend line as that one that Trump touts. So I think a lot of this stuff is just words.
Well, two things. One is the last 2 months, and you probably have done this. Look at the last 2 months increase, April and May, because of course we haven't got.
Yeah.
April, the end of April to the end of June, which are the last numbers we have, and it's freaking August. those 2 months is 4.7% annual growth.
Yeah,
that
well,
is
I
not
think it probably has something to do with. Yeah, I think that has something to do with the fact that people realize that, you know, an electric vehicle is not going to take them on a road trip.
No, what I'm
know,
saying this is no, I'm talking about M2. I'm going to shift.
Oh,
it
M2. Out. Okay, yeah. All right.
But
yeah.
I think one of the things, and I'm gonna be a little simpler on this than some grand scheme. What was it about 5-6 years ago? All the stuff in the fracking areas started to decrease. If you look at the numbers, what's the one in North Dakota? One's the
Bakken,
then the one in Texas is Permian, right?
Permian, yeah.
But if you look those numbers, all of a sudden somebody, maybe more of a progression than an absolute invention, somebody developed a way to go further horizontal. I'm going to say 5-6 years ago, and since then, all their production numbers have turned around and gone right back up.
Hmm.
So I think it's more of an inventive thing than it is a policy thing.
Yeah, as people who are free to pursue profits, relatively speaking, you know, they want to pursue those profits, and you know, over time, creative people come up with creative solutions.
Well, and I think it's $70 oil. $70 oil. I think they're very profitable at $70 oil.
Yeah,
where 10 years ago, maybe not.
Innovation, what does innovation do? People are trying to innovate and find creative ways to lower production costs, right? And you see that with fast food restaurants now with $20 minimum wages in California. These companies are really trying to find ways to cut out the human worker, right? And they're going to, you know, and it's easiest for people like McDonald's and Burger King.
It's $7 or $8 for one of those crummy burgers. They can pay people $20.
I know, but still, I mean, markets matter. In Oakland, for example, the market wage is 14. In Huntington Beach, it's 20. So when you impose a $20 minimum wage for the entire state, it doesn't hurt Huntington Beach at all, but it definitely hurts those mom and pop stores. And this is only, I mean, this is for the chains that have 60 or more restaurants. So blanket minimum wage laws, I mean, honestly, just don't work. And they, you know, a Republican congressman in Long Island back in the 1960s, I believe, spearheaded the national federal minimum wage. And the reason why is because he saw New York firms move into the South. So what he wanted to do is he wanted to propose a minimum wage that was at the market wage in New York State.
Yeah, well, that's never going to work.
Firms from moving to the South.
That's never going to work.
Well, I mean, that's what his thinking was, right?
Well, I got one of the listeners sent me a W-2. I don't know if it's a relative or somebody, and they didn't say what state, so I could attack the state. But the person, I believe, was a full-time worker at McDonald's, and I think we're talking pretty close to 40 hours a week, and the W-2 last year was I think 13 grand or something. So what does that put you? $12 an hour? I mean, what is that?
Well, I mean, it depends if they're working full-time or part-time.
I think
with
the amount of hours it was on there, it looked like it was pretty full-time. I mean, what exactly do you do? How do you even...
2,000 hours would be full-time for the year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
2080. I remember that from Pullman.
Yeah. Well, we always use 2000 because
we always did too.
Easy to multiply.
Yeah.
And it allows for 2 weeks of vacation.
Yep. But I'm saying I don't know what you even remotely do with that. When lunch, I mean, the things that are so screwed up. You know, I mean, how can you have this is what I see with these numbers. And again, you know, I go back because I used to do this we start talking about. You know, what is the wage in, I'll say, one of these Chick-fil-A joints is probably making 15 or 16. They can't even buy, what was it, an hour and a half to buy lunch? Since one is an hour and a half work to buy a chicken sandwich, for God's sake, and a Coke?
Yeah.
I mean,
I worked at minimum wage in high school, a dishwashing job. And I think I mentioned this in our email chains. There was an Olympic event of the fastest automatic dishwasher loader. I would have won the gold medal.
There you go.
But I worked minimum wage. And I'm not saying that low-skilled people should not get paid well. All I'm pointing out is if you have a blanket minimum wage in a state with labor markets where there are areas where the market wage is 14 and there are areas where the market wage is 20, what's going to happen is you're not going to have any effect in that high wage, low skilled labor market in Huntington Beach, but it's going to have an effect in a place like Oakland. And what it's going to cause is those Oakland area restaurants, they don't have the margins to raise their hamburger prices on their customers because their customers are low-income people. So they don't have the ability to price up. So what they're going to have to do is, if they want to stay in business, if they can't afford the technology to switch to self-checkout kiosk, then they're going to have to lay off people. And that's going to raise unemployment. And that's going to mean there's going to be more people in that community that community that is hurting financially. There's going to be more people without work. So it's great that they're told by the state that they can, if they get a job, if they're lucky enough to find a job, they can make $20 an hour. But finding that job is going to be very difficult.
Well, hell, I think so you're...
That's the problem with these minimum wage laws.
Well, here's what I... here's what I'm gonna push back, and actually push back on the economic side reasonably hard, because everything you say about minimum wage laws in the short term, I don't think anybody could possibly find anything you say wrong. But when you extend stuff out long term, then all of a sudden you have a huge difference, because I think you and I together, I'm maybe more my economy stuff. I don't know anywhere near the number stuff that you do. But what I studied is a little bit different. And that everything that the Friedmanites always, every time you push this place, if there's a diseconomy in one spot over a period of time, it causes diseconomies in other spots. You know, pluses and minuses. And I had a conversation with my buddy Butcher Al, and he's been on the show a couple times. It was all about the restaurant business. And he opened up this Italian place. This is before COVID. And all of a sudden, you know, the restaurant workers, like you're talking about, were starting to look for more dough. And at that time, they're making $10 an hour. This is, you know, like I said, before COVID, it's 5-6 years ago. And all of a sudden, everybody wants to make $12.50. And he said, well, you know, I can't really pay that. And I said, Al, if you knew you had to pay that, would you have signed this lease? And he said, well, bleep no. So when you talk about somebody in the fast food business or in the restaurant business, I look at this stuff, how maybe it's, and by the way, you're the one who did this to me, you and Carl and these guys. So when I disagree with you, you're the one who did it to me. You made me look at this stuff much more long term.
Hey, disagreement is a great thing.
You made me look at this stuff. I look at
opinions bounce off each other, and the best ones rise to the top.
Okay, I'm looking here at the salary, you know, and we can apply this median income, $2,032 grand, and now it's like 40. This is for a person. Now families are a lot higher, obviously. So okay, it's up, whatever. What is it? 30%. I'm going to say if you went back and looked at a menu from any one of these places, McDonald's and you name it, from 2000 until today, those prices are up appreciably more than 30%. Appreciably more. Now, who got the dough? Now, the fact is, if the workers would have kept pace, I'm not saying higher or lower, would have kept pace, I think you'd find that your leases were less. Okay? Because everything, if I know this guy can open up a restaurant in my building, and he can pay people all the rice they can eat or $10 an hour, he's going to say he can make money at my $10,000 a month lease, and I can charge him $10,000, which is pretty, you know, which is great, you know. But if all of a sudden his costs other places, I'll say, were kept pace or were fair, he's going to say, hey, chief, I can only pay you 8 or 7, or stick it up your behind with the other 3. I'm saying it has gotten to the point now where the people are paying so much, like in leases and things, they're assuming this ridiculous, I mean, I, Thai joint that Audrey and I, Thai restaurant, the Thai joint, talking about Southside. They didn't want to give the cook a raise from 12, they just gave him a raise from 12 to like 16 bucks an hour. Well, everything on the menu was up 20%, and the guy does, you know, 20 dinners an hour. Well, where economically does that come out in any kind of labor economics? Hell.
Well, let me provide this to the audience. In Utah, there is no minimum wage. They go by the federal minimum wage. In Colorado, they increase the minimum wage every year, according to inflation. It's automatic. In Utah, with no increase in minimum wage, if you went to an Apollo Burger or you went to McDonald's or Burger King, the wages, I think in about 2019, were probably $10 an hour. The guys working at the car wash for trucks, the big semi-trucks and RVs, they were making $18 an hour. And this is low-skilled labor. At $18 an hour,
it's a tough job, though.
Yeah, yeah. But it's $18 an hour is more than double the federal minimum wage. Over in Colorado, when they do these automatic minimum wage hikes, in the year that they had the highest minimum wage hike, it did the most damage in the poorest counties. Because we broke up the study by how rich the county was according to county median wage. So you have the rich counties, you know, the ski lift counties, you have the wealthy neighborhood counties, and then you have the poor counties, the rural counties. And what that largest minimum wage hike did in those poor counties, we're talking about the number of employers. And we used industry code for like restaurants, cafeterias, beverage bars. They're the most likely to hire minimum wage workers. And what we observed was a massive reduction in the number of firms operating in really poor counties. We saw no effect in the counties that were, you know, at the higher end. So that right there shows you what happens when you have a business that relies on low skilled labor. When you artificially raise their labor cost, a lot of them go out of business or they shrink. And if those businesses are going out of business, then those poor people who need those jobs, they see opportunities disintegrate. And when you have fewer demanders for labor, right? When you have fewer demanders for labor in a labor market, in a poor county, the labor demand shrinks, the market wage goes down even further, which makes that minimum wage even more painful.
Well, there's no doubt about that, Hal, that if we were politicians and the market wage is 15 and the minimum wage is 8, the first thing we would do is raise the minimum wage to 10, because we're not doing anything except...
Exactly, and that's how most federal minimum wage laws, increases, have been enacted. They've enacted them historically in periods of time where unemployment was low and the economy is growing well. So we don't get to observe the unemployment that minimum wage creates,
but everything is
until
we go into
a recession.
But everything is a micro, not everything, but a lot of stuff is a micro economy. Remember the guy, this had to be like 3-4 years ago, you ran, and we were of course jousting, and somebody in Washington state said that the minimum wage for the people that worked in the Seattle airport, like bars and restaurants and stuff, that their minimum wage should be like $25. And I don't know if you were outraged or somebody, one of the guys on the show, was outraged. And I'm going, guys, don't you get it? That these are political spots, and they're saying there can only be two bars for all the zillions of people that come through here. And anybody who wants a beer is going to be paying $12 when the normal price should be like $3 or $4. And that if you're getting that much of a largesse from the government for this kind of monopoly, don't be thinking you're paying any bleep $10 an hour and get away with it. at least share the wealth.
Yeah.
That's a totally separate economic argument, right? I mean,
yeah. Well, when I went to when I flew around a couple of years ago for some job interviews, I was trying to get a job in New York because my wife was unhappy in Utah. I was on a couple of flights, and every bar I went to, it seemed like in an airport, it seemed like they replaced a human being as the bartender with these tablets, and the tablets were at every seating location on the bar. And the person behind the bar, I waited for her to come out, and she said, I don't take orders, I just bring the drinks to the customers. So, I mean, that was going on at JFK.
And she wants a tip. I'm sure she wants a tip.
Yeah. So, you know, I was like, you know, I kind of felt like Drac in Hotel Transylvania 2, where he's trying to operate a smartphone. I'm trying to order, you know, an adult beverage at this bar, and I'm having trouble, like, trying to figure out how to do it.
You know, one of the things, one thing that's a constant in this world from back in God knows when is when you go to a bar, you throw money, they throw you a drink. They don't even do that anymore? That used to be one of the things you could always count on, Hal.
Well, the bars I went, there were several bars I went to, and you didn't look at a bartender. You looked at a tablet.
And then some of them don't take money. How bad is that?
Yeah. Well, you would pay on the tablet too.
Yeah, I got no interest. I got no interest in that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, the great thing about a place where you can have a adult beverage is everybody knows your name.
Yeah.
The bartender hands out advice, right? He'll sell you when you've had a few too many, some Camel and filters, because that's all he has behind the bar. And then you smoke the whole pack that night because you and your parents have these addictive personalities, and you're green for a week, and you don't do that for another 10 years.
S&P Futures up 2, NASDAQ is up 2. How long can these guys push this? I mean, I don't want to see any kind of crash here. I mean, guys are doing pretty good. You know, we got some puts, but even so, if we turn, we're not going to make money. We won't lose anywhere near as much as other people.
Well,
but
let's
talk about it after the break.
Yeah.
S&P Futures up 2. Sticking here a little bit. We were up a little more. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problem now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our Better Business Bureau A-rated team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. Call now for a free case review and a low price guaranteed quote to get you protected today. Call now. 800-388-4901. That's 800-388-4901. U.S. Tax Shield. 800-388-4901.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now. Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. Ricardo on the board. S&P Futures up $1.75. So we're still up here, which, you know, we haven't seen. We've been up every day. This is kind of a lot in terms of days in a row, but, you know, it'd be nice. NASDAQ Futures up 50 cents. We have Dow Futures down 29. I don't know what's going on there. We'll look and see. Boeing's down 214. They're probably the culprit. So is Home Depot's down $1.67. They're down a little bit with the Lowe's announcement last night that things are slowing down on the remodeling side of the business. But that's not much. Home Depot's been up pretty much huge every day. Europe, the DAX down 20.1%. FTSE down 65.8%. They're down pretty heavy here. CAC down 1. So Europe is down, but FTSE is the one that's actually down. Sweden's RAKS Bank cuts rates. Sounds like Rick's Bank, like it would be owned by Rick, but that's not. There must be some Swedish term there. Over in Asia, Nikkei up 674, 1.8%, 38,062. Hang Seng down 58.3%, 17,511. Shanghai down 27, what they were up yesterday, 28.66. So they're kind of mired in this mid-2800s, really can't move one way or the other. Yesterday, Dow was up 236, S&P up 54, NASDAQ up 245 again in the afternoon. A lot of mutual fund buying, it seems, buying every night in the close. Bonds, unchanged 3.86, the Bund down 2 basis points, 2.23, Japan unchanged 0.89. Oil up 8 cents, 74.45, Brent up 17 cents, 77.83, natural gas up 4 cents, 227, the whole oil patch, very, very quiet. Gold up again today, 2470. 2566 is the December contract. The August contract, which was off the board this Thursday, is 25-25. Now, the difference in those two would be interest and storage. Okay, we'll go through that someday when Greg's on. So you're always going to have a, well, you should have a premium to the stuff going out because you don't, because you got to pay storage and you got to pay interest to hold it. So there you go. Foreign exchange. Euro, we're up over 110, almost 111, 110.82. On the euro, meaning the dollar's down a little bit. 7 month low before Powell's speech. British pound is 1.30. They are topping 1.30. This has been a lot. And the yen was at 163 to the dollar. Now it's 146. So that's a lot stronger than it was a few weeks ago. Bitcoin up 1,700. 60,746 as the dollar's going down. Go figure. Carter, what do you ask for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Cubs were off yesterday. Couldn't lose if they're off.
That's right. Yeah. Morning, Chief. It's 7:36 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. 66 degrees right now with a high of 70. Mostly sunny. But very nice weather, though. It's a nice day for outdoor activities. Tonight is going to be mainly clear with a low of 60 degrees. In Phoenix, Arizona, 89 degrees right now with a high of 112. Mostly sunny with a temperature near the record of 113. So beware of dehydration and heat stroke. So now it will be windy, partly cloudy, and very warm with a low of 88 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe, 34 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook, 53 minutes. We're looking at about 20 minutes. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 22 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 24 minutes. Lastly, sports. Yesterday, the Diamondbacks beat the Marlins 9-6, and the White Sox sadly lost to the Giants 5-3. Today, we got a couple games. We got Diamondbacks play the Marlins again, 5:40 p.m. The Cubs play the Tigers at 7:05 p.m., and the White Sox play the Giants at 8:45 p.m. Lastly, the NFL preseason games are in session right now. Thursday, August 22nd is the day the Bears are playing the Chiefs at 7:20 p.m. That's all I got for you, Chief.
On a baseball note, Hal, Sunday night, no local teams played except for the game of the week, and I watched Detroit beat the Yankees in extra innings, and God, I love. Why do I like it when the Yankees lose? Is that just?
I like it because my brother Ryan is sad.
God,
he's a big Yankees fan from Idaho.
I like to see the Yankees lose. I always like to see Southern Cal lose. Alabama. There's a few teams that just, you know, seem to me like.
I think the only teams I like the Red Sox in baseball generally. I haven't watched baseball in a long time. I like the Bears, but they're never very good. And
what do you mean
NBA,
this year? This year they got them in a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Everybody's so charged up about these guys.
I don't know if Caleb Williams is gonna be that good because he was really sloppy with the ball, especially against Notre Dame. I mean, he was almost like. It was a moral hazard, and NIL money and all the media attention he's getting. That Notre Dame game, he's from the ball away, left and right. I mean, he just was horrible. And then in that bowl game, they had a guy that had almost no playing time with a team that wasn't as good because a lot of the stars were sitting out. They beat, I think, the crap out of Louisville.
Yeah.
A team that beat Notre Dame by 20 points or something. Well, so I'm not sold on Caleb Williams. I'm just not.
I don't like. Well, the guys that are smaller size, they have to be really good athletes, which he looks like he is. This is like the ninth number one savior pick the Bears have had at quarterback in the last 20 years.
I think it's going to be another Justin Fields. Honestly, I think it's going to be another Justin Fields.
He seems to have a little more commanded of the what's going on than Fields. But yeah. Hey, what are you making this guy?
Pull up himself. I think he's a little full of himself.
Well, little.
Well, yeah, he's a little full.
This is what happens when if it's a bad day for you. You see this guy, Morgan Stanley International Chair. The people that died on his yacht in Sicily.
I didn't see that. I've been packing and getting ready to move to North Carolina.
British tech entrepreneur. You probably remember his name, Mike Lynch, and his 18-year-old daughter. The 56-meter sailing boat was hit. Wow. I think it was hit by a tornado.
Hmm.
I mean, the thing is, it's sitting there, and all of a sudden it sinks.
A tornado over the water?
Yeah, or what do they call it, a water spout. And they said the thing, they had this crew of 10, it's 150 feet, and it just went down.
Hmm.
I mean, and they saved some of the people, but the entrepreneur and his daughter are missing. And
are the weather reports confirming there was a tornado? Or
well, they said it was such a violent thing. It wasn't just like a big wind. It was all anchored off out. I don't know if it was in a protected harbor or whatever, but they had no idea that this was coming, evidently.
Yeah. Tornadoes usually they lose their potency over. Like when we lived in North Carolina, my wife and I, before the kids came, we had tornadoes coming through. And we had a tornado going right over the top of us. But we fortunately lived just east of this huge lake by Byron Park. And the tornado went over that lake and it slowed. And its tip lifted about, I don't know, 150 feet in the air. It went over the top of us and then it touched down east of us. So usually when tornadoes go over water, they lose a lot of power.
Well, it says here the 56-meter sailing yacht was hit by a violent storm around 4 a.m. The anchored vessel capsized near the port of Porticello, with witnesses telling local media that the boat descended rapidly after its mast broke. What kind of wind do you need to break a mast without any sails up, for God's sake?
Wow. Huh. That's crazy.
Yeah, that's not a... We're not talking about a 50-mile-an-hour gust. I mean, it's got to be way more than that. This poor guy and all these people. Yeah. All right, so what's... We have... The policy wonks saying stuff, and the Trump campaign is of course they're saying this is the inflation is totally a Biden phenomenon, and you know no, that's not true, but what people believe in that, you know, whatever what's true or not. So we're going to have all this stuff going for the next few months. We're probably going to have the Fed leaking money in because they don't want to see any kind of a crash yet. I think we think we're distancing ourselves from regular America the more stuff goes up, inflation-wise and otherwise. They seem to think that they can get it all back together in the next couple of years. How far? I mean, even Kevin texts, in the short run, he says to me, how come if the prices of the dinners go up 20% and the cook's wages go up 20%, how is he being shafted? On that day, he's probably not. But if you have a 20-year history to where nobody's gotten a raise as the other stuff has gone up, all of a sudden your numbers are... It's like saying the price of cars went up 3% last year and you got a 3% raise. What are you bitching about? Well, because the last time I bought a car 10 years ago, it was X and I was making X, and now it's double and I'm not making anywhere near double. It's a question of where you are on the calculation line, right?
Yeah, I mean, if the wage increases are lagged, then you get this, you could have a 10% appreciation in your wage today. But if it's lagged, then I think that lagged, those lag percent changes where you have prices accelerating quickly, but there's a longer history of those, of that acceleration than wages at a snapshot in time. You know, real wages might be up 10%, prices might be up 10%, but you got to remember there's a longer time horizon. And with inflation, it's not a linear increase. It's a geometric increase. It's a constantly accelerating increase. So at a point in time, if you just look at the two numbers, you go, oh, the employee's up 10% and prices are up 10%. Well, that discounts what happened in the previous 10, 15 years, right? What I've been thinking about over this weekend is I've done some more projects for my mother-in-law. When I do projects for my mother-in-law, I come up with some really interesting ideas. I think about what policy government really does. And what government does is it generally restricts, creates barriers. You got restrictions, you got con laws. Con laws are convenience and need laws where, like, Brooklyn Hospital can issue a veto on a new hospital and claim that there's enough capacity in the neighborhood where we don't need a new hospital. So you have these convenience and need laws, you have licensing, you have restrictions and regulations. And if you think about the cumulative effect of all that, that limits your supply. So in other words, supply is left when it should be right. It's a lot lower than it should be otherwise. And compounding that is what the Fed does. The Fed creates inflation.
Well, your buddy Milton Friedman used to always rag on the fact that the AMA determined how many medical schools there should
exactly.
be.
Exactly. I mean, that's exactly what I'm talking about here, right? I'm channeling my inner Friedman here. So you have government that generally restricts activity. And you have the Fed that generally does the opposite. It pumps out really cheap money. And we all know that cheap money, if the Fed is being relatively restrictive compared to what it was a year ago, you know it's leaking out to the ultra-rich, right? And they're buying on margin. So the more money that the Fed creates, however it does, the more money it creates through increased bank lending or just printing money or digitizing it into existence or just paying bills, right? It can just write a check. That generally does what? That benefits the people at the high end. And I've been living in New York for 2 years, and I am convinced of this. All these policies that are intended to help all these poor people and these working poor people in New York City do quite the opposite. They create basically little monopolies in most trades, right? You know, plumbing, whatnot. And when you have a lot fewer competitors to face, you can provide really horrible quality and customer service. So I think combined, what this creates is, in the absence of all this stuff that government does, prices would be a lot lower because supplies wouldn't be as restrained. And then the money supply, what the Fed does definitely benefits the people at the high end more so than people at the bottom end. Because what are the people doing at the bottom end whose incomes aren't keeping up with inflation? They're using credit to buy stuff, like consumer goods.
Yeah, 20%, where everybody else is at 5%.
Yeah. And what are the rich doing with this credit? They're buying assets. They're leveraging assets, whether it's real estate or professional football properties, basketball properties. They're buying assets. And that right there, leveraging to buy assets is how they can accelerate their wealth growth. Meanwhile, the people at the bottom end, they're just using credit at 20% to pay bills and buy groceries and buy cars, right? And that's how they get stuck in this debt cycle that makes them poor and poor and poor.
Well, if you go back, and this is, right now you could never, well, when you're talking about who gains on this stuff, I'm looking here at the tax, 2023 tax rates. If you make up to 44 grand, you're essentially paying 12%, right? And this is on taxable income. All right, but as soon as you go over 44 to 95, you're paying 22%. So
yeah. On any income over 44.
Yeah, so if somebody is making, say, 41 or so, which I believe is where the median is, and all of a sudden over the next 5 years you inflate the hell out of the place, and even if he's, you know, like Kevin wrote, right, if everything, the price went up 20% and his wages went up 20%, they didn't really, because now the government's going to take another 10% of that out of it.
And that's made worse by the government purposely or mistakenly. I don't think it matters whether it's purposely or mistakenly. Measures inflation.
Well, they back
that
in
that makes it worse.
I mean, you know, I keep saying back in the day, and people think it's all history lesson here. It's not. I used to, back when they were simpler, I actually used to do some taxes for people. And, you know, I was never good at it. My brother was real good at it because he was a CPA. I didn't want anybody.
Does your brother have the CPA cap and the pocket protector?
Oh, no. But he's good at all this stuff. But, I mean, when I know a guy, he was an accountant for someplace. And how can you say nicely to a guy who was like a squirrel? He looked like Woody Allen, right? He thought he was Robert Redford, but he kind of looked like Woody Allen.
Your brother?
No, this buddy of mine, or a friend of a friend of mine. Actually, a friend of Robin's, who's the one who used to be on the show that died in an accident this year. And his big shtick was there was a building at the 1 East Scott. And not to go into this years ago, hell, but if you were a young man, which you were at one time, you would pay any price to spend an afternoon at the swimming pool at the top of that place. Because this is long before there was a rapid transit to O'Hare. The place was loaded with stewardesses hot bunking, where two girls would share a studio or something, because the bus to the airport was a block away at the Ambassador West. And that was back when girls had to get weighed in every week. Let's just say the scenery was pretty good. And anyway, this guy had a little shtick where he would do the income taxes for all these stews with the EZ form, which took him like, but he would never do it in 5 minutes in front of me. He'd say, "I'll take this back to my office." The EZ form would took 5 minutes. Anyway, but the all during the Reagan situation, and he cut some of the rates. I'm not going to say he didn't, but there were tax brackets like every couple of grand.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
You know, I mean, if you made 14 grand, you paid, you know, whatever X number, and then if you made 14.8, it was like you paid $500 plus 10% of the anything from 14 to 15.5, and then if it was 15.5, you paid X, and then you paid, you know, 18% from 15 to 16. There were all these so every time over a period of time in the even with the unions back in the 70s that actually got these escalation clauses in their contract, every time the CPI went up, they automatically got a raise. You never kept up, because every time you got a raise, you jumped into the next bracket and paid the government more. So the government's the biggest winner with inflation.
Yeah. Well, you know, when I was working for my parents at the bus terminal, Lewiston bus terminal, my stepfather and my mom, they would allow me to basically decide how much I got paid that week. I'd go to the tax tables. And if I worked like, you know, 20 hours a week, you know, my net was this. If I scaled it back to 18 hours, my net was actually higher.
God.
So well, they didn't have the. I would play with the tax tables to minimize how much I paid Uncle Sam, but while maximize how much money I got. It was only like a few, you know, dollars, right? It was only a few dollars, but hey, a few dollars back then, you know, an Egg McMuffin before school was like $1.50, right?
Yeah.
It netted me an extra Egg McMuffin a week.
Well, you didn't have. In those days, you didn't have the what do you want to call them? The fixed payroll taxes.
You had these payroll tables, right? You had these payroll tables, and they were really thick.
But you didn't have the Social Security and the Medicare and all our stuff. They weren't on there. So you're, yeah. I mean, right now, I mean, most people, boy, oh boy, you don't even want to think about it. But in theory, and this is why you sort of have to be careful when people say they want a cashless society, because you're going to lose a hell of a lot of freedom. I'm not talking about just cheating, but
oh yeah.
I mean, if
yeah.
you're in Chicago, if some dude comes by and wants to shovel my snow, you know, he could be 2 8-year-olds and 12-year-olds, and I give him, hey, here's $20, guys. In theory, they should send a check for $3 to the government, right? It's 15% is the payroll tax if you're on your own.
Yeah.
You know, and if all of a sudden I have to, you know, Zembo, one of those guys, the thing, and put it down as an expense for the building, I'm going to say those dudes are going to get a bill at the end of the year. Hey, you 12-year-olds, where's my $3 from Uncle Sam?
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, this is way more sinister than people think it is. Or, you know, I mean, I'm sure if they thought about it for a second, and I'm not saying that they're dummies, they don't know this. It's not the truth. But it's stuff you don't even think about. I don't have any. Do you have any compulsion of a guy cut your grass, giving him $20 and saying, here you go?
Yeah, I would do that.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
Waiters, wait staff prefer cash.
Well, yeah.
Credit card tips, right?
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Because they have to declare the credit card tips.
So, I mean, we have, when you see this stuff on these massive levels, and the politicians, I mean, you're more like Milton Friedman than you think. He would say that's why you can't let inflation get out of the bag, because in the beginning it feels so good, and then some people do so well with it. I mean, I mentioned a few weeks ago, I was reading more about the Weimar Republic. When they started doing that, you know, there were all kinds of farmers in Germany that had mortgages on their land. Well, the minute you started pouring money into the system, and the price of, you know, a thing of oats, the bushel went from, let's say, $5 to 50, the first thing they did was take this funny money and turn around and give it to their bank and say, here's my mortgage paid off.
Yeah.
And by the way, the farm is now worth, you know, a hell of a lot more, because
it feels really good when it first starts, but man, I'll tell you, it gets crushing pretty quick.
But you shouldn't, I mean, I would say that, and everybody's going to think I'm really nuts here, you know, so please tell them I'm not. Everybody, you think, in this country, that the people who own the assets, the people who own the Six Flat, the people who own the other stuff, they should always do better than the people who don't. And yet, if you actually, if you have any sort of economic theory under, if you had any kind of a pure system, it wouldn't make any difference, right? It shouldn't make any difference, because when people decide they're gonna pay for something, whether it's stock or borrow money or whatever it is, everything has an implied interest rate, or a building, whatever it is. You should get the risk-free rate plus whatever risk is associated with that investment, correct?
Yeah.
And whatever it is, if you get a great bargain on a place for whatever reason or whatever it is, you know, okay, you might do a little bit better for a while, but everything's going to equal out. So the person who owns the building should have no more edge over a long period of time than the person who has the rent. So if you and I, all of a sudden, we're sitting there, you know, we have each have families. I mean, you do, I don't. We're both renting a building, or we should say, all of a sudden you decide, wow, I've got this great idea for, you know, I'll say something stupid, like a hula hoop. And we go, okay, nobody has a hula hoop. We could actually do really well on this for a while. Instead of putting our money together and buying a six flat, why don't we just rent and put our money where, you know, where we think we can do better with it for a while. So all of a sudden we do that, and the hula hoop comes out, and we make a lot of dough for a couple of years till finally five other people start making hula hoops. And guess what? The hula hoop industry is back down to a regular return plus the risk. Like, and everything should work like that. And what you're always talking about in government...
Well, it can't work like that, yeah, with the Federal Reserve.
Right.
It can't work
with the Federal Reserve, and it can't work like that with the government, because there's people constantly get... I mean, the people who own... I'll use Viagra. People who invent Viagra should get a head start on everybody else and be able to charge, you know, whatever, $50 a pill like they did. And everybody else should be able to close that gap as fast as they can, which still makes it worthwhile to make Viagra or develop it, because you get a six-month, year-and-a-half head start. And by the way, you can still sell it for a profit later on, but a fair profit. The government steps in and goes, oh, no, you get 19 years. 19 yeah. years. What the hell is that all about? I mean...
And you get government... stamp of approval,
yeah,
too.
Well, and discipline. They'll stop anybody else from selling it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how this stuff gets all screwed up, as you're always talking about.
Yeah.
But
I think the only way we're going to be able to fix this is if, I think with the Fed, I mean, I say this over and over and over, it's not going anywhere. The way you fix the Fed is you tell it, hey, stop worrying about unemployment and economic growth. All you're going to look at is M2 money growth, and that's it. You're just going to maintain it at the rate of population growth, period, in the story. No more colluding with other, no more talking to other central banks, no more worrying about unemployment and GDP growth. You're just going to grow M2 at some steady pace. I can live with that. I think that's a much better, least bad situation that we have. And it puts people like us, we'll benefit from that instead of just the top benefiting from that. So that's the first thing we got to do.
So the top would vote for this way?
Well, they're not going to go for it, right? They're never going to.
And by the way, they're the ones at Jackson Hole, not you and me.
Yeah. Yeah, they're the ones that are invited, right?
Yeah.
So that was the first thing we had to do. And, you know, if I was interviewing Kamala Harris, I would load the question up. Do you really care about the people at the bottom 50%? Trump, do you really care about your voters? You claim that you care about these people at the bottom end of the income distribution. Well, if you really, really, really cared about these people, then you would change the way the Fed does its business. You would stop this nonsense of them trying to create a situation where you have stable price increases at 2%, low unemployment, and modest economic growth. You would stop doing that if you really cared about these people.
Well, the idea,
and that's how I load the question to them.
I don't want to. Well, I guess everything you say is somewhat political, but. I know a lot of Trumpers. The thought that Trump in his entire lifetime has ever given a thought to anybody in the lower middle class. He's not that kind of a porcupine. He just isn't. He wouldn't even know anybody from the.
That's what the media. That's what the media likes people to believe. But I really think, as a businessman, you want a good relationship with customers. Business people don't want to treat the customers bad. That's kind of why, you know, if I have my preference, I don't want a 50-year politician. I want a guy that sells things to people. Now, Trump, he tends to sell things to rich people, right? So, but still, a guy that sells things to rich people in several different countries, she really doesn't want war. A guy that's been in D.C. for 50 years, who probably owns stocks in all these defense companies, well, war is good for him or her.
Well, that's the one refreshing thing that I see about Harris.
A business person is held accountable by customers, and they want to make their customers happy. So, the media has a narrative they like to talk about Trump. I'm not saying I'm going to vote for him. I don't think I'm going to vote for Kamala Harris. She didn't get one vote in the primary. I'm not going to probably vote for anybody. But
what do you mean? Who should I vote for? You or Carol?
I don't know, man. I'm going to ride in Caliglia's horse because that horse has sense.
Well, seriously, between you and Carol, who should I vote for?
if you want a guy, Carl's a great guy to vote for. I mean, I'd vote for him. I think he's got a lot of great ideas, but I can't vote for anybody this term. I really can't. The Libertarian Party candidate seems to be...
Who even is that?
Libertarianism.
I keep saying I'm going to vote for him or her. I don't know who the hell it is. Who is it?
It's the guy that... I forget his name. I lost interest when he got nominated. And I'm not a Libertarian Party member. I'm not a member of any party. I'm a independent libertarian, a small L libertarian. But I watched the debates in the Libertarian Party convention. I listened to the debates. And to me, he is a guy that is generally progressive. And there are two kinds of libertarians. There are conservative libertarians and there are progressive libertarians. Conservative libertarians are more like Thomas Sowell and Walter Williams. If he was a conservative libertarian like Walter Williams and Thomas Sowell, I'd vote for him. But he's not. So I really have to take this election year off.
I'm trying to figure out where the hell I would be. I guess I'm, in a lot of ways, I'm...
I see you as a JFK Democrat.
Pretty much. Paul Simon.
I see you as a JFK Democrat.
Paul Simon, Adlai Stevenson, those are my guys.
Yeah.
But I'm very progressive in the sense that I realize that there's massive displacement here in terms of job skills, in terms of stuff. We're trying to bring people back. Bring manufacturing into this country, and I hear there are some stuff in rural areas that I think are doing better. I'd open up these high schools at night. I'd get them back to more of a technical school, and if adults wanted to show up at night, I don't care if they're immigrants, black, blue, Chinese, white. I don't give a who we are. We need to get people with a skill set to where they're making 30, 40 bucks an hour.
Well, in order to do that, you have to free the high school system from the government.
Well, without a doubt. I mean, you didn't use the high school
system.
The
government's forcing.
Yeah, but
these
why did they used to do that?
To make college graduates.
But they used to do that. There were all kinds of technicals. But I'm saying.
Oh yeah, I took woodshop. One of my friends on Facebook said, I was the teacher's pet in eighth grade woodshop at our junior high school because I made these really cool projects like these country kitchen cabinets.
I assume this is a female teacher.
Yeah. Oh, he was missing a few fingers.
Oh. Anyway, I'm saying, in terms of progressive, I think out of all the economic stuff we talk about, all the problems with the welfare, with this, that, and the other thing, the part of all this stuff somewhat disappears if we go from 60% of the people in the workforce actually having, I'll say, a good job to 67% like we used to have. Because I think at 67%, we can carry the people that have issues. 60%, I don't think you can.
I think if you set the high school system free of government dictates, and those high schools had to compete for customers, I think you'd have high schools that would become very innovative, and they would probably want to tap, the adult customer.
Sure.
Right? In various different programs, analytics, maybe woodshop, maybe auto shop. These schools would be going after competing for these customers. Instead, they're all waiting for government to sign their check over.
Well, the problem with that is, it's a question of how you do it. We're paying so much money into the educational system. You and I like the Catholic schools. That'll go over like a fart in church with some people. Like the Catholic schools, when people are paying into the tax rolls to educate younger people. If you and I start doing it, for us to get not a speck of that dough is pretty screwed up. Because yeah. we are performing the function.
If you're a parent paying private school tuition, you're paying tuition to a school your kid doesn't go to, and you're paying tuition
yeah, that's what I'm saying.
To the school your kids go
in,
to.
In Canada, because I did part of first grade in Canada, if you were accredited, it's much like the charter schools here now. I mean, if the money, let's say it's 10 grand a year, well, actually it's more like 20-something here in Chicago. If you and I bought an old high school and had a high school and a technical school and everything, and when we put the money into the place, and all of a sudden we have 1,000 people there, I don't think we get money for the adults, okay? But for the regular students, and we set it up as a charter school, that money follows over. We just have to take care of the plant and equipment.
Yeah, the other problem, though, is the fact that the state or the federal government is dictating what the curriculum should be through standardized testing. And so you have to address that issue, too. Let these schools figure out for themselves how to best serve their communities. And if they're all competing against each other, you're going to have one heck of an awesome education system.
Well, I don't mean the guys in the building here, their sons go to the charter schools on the south side, yeah. and they're doing fine.
Well, but the charter schools would be even better if they were free from the dictates of the state. They'd be better because they would be coming up with even more innovative solutions.
Well, that's true. I mean,
to teach the test, it would be even more innovative.
Well, you would hope that no matter what school it is, somebody comes out of there being able to add, subtract, multiply, divide, and write, and those civics.
Or fix a car, right? Or fix a car.
Or yeah, fix my truck.
Or wire a house. Right?
All right, we got a dash, buddy. Good stuff. When are you moving?
Well, we're going to be in North Carolina this weekend. It's too short for us to buy a house. We're going to get a short-term rental. And then that'll give my wife a chance to find work. And then once she has work, then we're going to start looking for houses, visit houses.
You guys aren't going to pull the RV down there and live.
We're going to bid for our final house.
You're not going to live in like the RV in somebody's driveway, are you?
No, just a short-term rental, like an apartment downtown, okay. like Burlington or Grand, North Carolina.
What's the town you're going to?
Probably Burlington.
Okay.
It's a relatively low-price housing market. It's between Greensboro and Durham. Durham and Greensboro, you know.
Well, I can come down and we go see the Durham Bulls.
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. Well, we'll have to watch, the night before, we'll have to watch Bull Durham, right?
Yeah. God. SP Futures down 3, NASDAQ Futures down 32. What'd she say? This is the craziest summer. The Bulls can't lose and I can't have any sex.
And why is it calling me Nuke? Yeah. I'm the one with a quadraphonic blah punk. You don't need a quadraphonic blah punk, you need a curveball.
God. Anyway, back tomorrow, Stocks and Jack. Good job.
That's all, folks.